It's March 23rd, 2015. We're at Larry McCready's house and just a little visit. And we usually start somewhere in the back in the high, maybe your high school days, and proceed from there, Larry. But you were at senior, and what you said you're getting your 50th anniversary coming up.
Yes, our 50th class anniversary.
1965.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got to your senior year, and you thought, "What am I going to do with myself?" So, what were the things that prompted you to go to UNI?
Well, I went there to run track and play football originally, and I really didn't get any interest athletically from any of the other schools until a week before school was starting. Francis Kretzmeyer from Iowa called and said, "Oh, I could probably get you a scholarship." And I said, "Well, I'm committed to UNI." Well, at that time it was SCI.
Yeah.
So I guess I ended up at SCI, and then played football freshman year. Freshmen were ineligible at that time, so I played with those guys. And then when track season came, we started track in January, and I guess I wanted to run in the Drake Relays a little more than I wanted to play in the spring football game, because it was the same weekend.
Okay.
So I ended up at UNI, and I graduated from there in January 1970.
Okay. And you decided on a major at some point?
Well, I originally went to have a major in phys ed and industrial arts at that time. And I ended up with a major in PE and a minor in industrial arts.
Okay. So, graduated in 1970.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're at the point, what am I going to do with myself? So, you needed a job. How did that go?
Well, that was kind of interesting. Yeah, I substitute taught here in Dubuque for a couple of months. And then my college coach had written a guy in Southern California in the Los Angeles area that was an organizer or had stuff to do with Southern California Striders Track Club. So I went out there for, I think I was out there 6-7 weeks, maybe 8 weeks. And things didn't go, it was hard finding a job.
Were you looking for a teaching job then? Or?
I was.
Oh.
And we were engaged at the time to get married in July.
Pressure.
Yeah. So I ran in 2-3 meets out there, and in the third one, I hurt hamstring a little bit. That was about 2 or 3 weeks before we were supposed to get married. We did get married in July, and then I made a decision to come back here and discontinue that part of my life and come back and be a working guy, I guess.
Okay.
But we got married July 18th, 1970. We were on our honeymoon. I get back. We went to northern Minnesota. We were there 5 or 6 days. 5 days, maybe. And I get back, and my mom had saw the ad in the paper from Western Dubuque looking for an industrial arts teacher.
Okay.
So I called out there and said I'd be interested in.
Who'd you talk to?
I don't know, maybe Colleen Hancock.
Okay.
She was a secretary at that time. And then I talked to Mr. Buckman, and I got an interview with him and Dick Ballou, and I was there probably 10 minutes, and they offered me the job.
I've heard so many stories from other guys that I've visited with about how they got hired. And most of it was like exactly like you said.
Yeah. I had hair very short. It was big. They asked me how I would handle discipline, and I said, there wouldn't be any discipline. I'd take care of it. Or something
You're
like that. So, and Harry Davis was getting drafted at that time, and he couldn't get out of it. And that's who I took his position.
Okay. And
I felt bad for him at that time. That was not he was married and...
Yeah.
Not a good situation for him.
Back at that point, then you were hired for that fall term. What was your assignments?
I was teaching in the wood shop at that time. That was my only job, was the wood shop. I didn't coach anything. I'd been crazy. I was so busy preparing myself to teach from day to day, I didn't have time to do anything else, hardly. But I liked the opportunities that I could spend out there on Saturdays and after school late, whatever, preparing to get familiar with everything. I learned an awful lot that first year, or the second year, or the third year.
Yeah, well, okay, so that was your first and second year was in the wood shop?
Yeah, I was in the wood shop probably, I don't know, 7, 8 years, no. 6 or 7 years, maybe, because when Harry came back, our enrollment had grown so much that we had so many kids that I was in the metal shop for a couple periods a day, and I was in the wood shop for a couple periods a day, and Harry was full-time in the wood shop, and so I split between all that. And then when Dave Barr got hired to be the maintenance leader, I went into the auto shop.
The auto shop at that time was just...
I was in the auto shop where it is now, where it is at the present one, the second year the building was built.
Okay.
Dave Barr was in that addition 1 year.
That was the first year I came, I think, as assistant principal.
Okay.
78, 79?
Yeah, somewhere in there. Because Barr was moving to the maintenance guy, and then I went in that room.
Right.
And then that's when Tim Lettner was hired. And then there was another guy hired with Lettner, but I can't remember his name. I was thinking about this history stuff this morning a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, who was that? What did he teach?
He taught electronics, I think. Electricity and electronics.
Okay.
And then...
He'll probably come to me later.
No, I don't know. He wasn't there very long.
Yeah.
And then in the metal shop, Steve Colopy taught in there.
Right.
And the guy before... There was... Paul Otterman was started there when I was started. Then it was this guy from Acoca, Bob Jessen, I believe.
Okay.
He wasn't there less than a semester. And then Steve Colopy came, and then I team taught kind of with him.
Okay.
During his prep period, I would be in there, and I had 2 or 3 classes in there.
Well, that was really a nice... addition when the auto shop was added along
yeah.
with other rooms back there.
Yeah, we went to the school board meeting that night when they were finalizing the building deal. And at the previous time before that, we were meeting the auto shop and the metal shop people were alternating every other day. We were in a classroom when the other auto was in the shop, and then metals was in the shop, and auto was in the class. And the wood shop had every class, every period full, because we had so many kids. But we explained to the school board, hey, we need a room for the auto shop so the metal shop can have and all this separate, you know, so everybody has their own little spot. And they included it then along with the ag shop in that addition, which that made things a whole lot better. But now I guess they're getting the building for everything.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Well, okay, maybe we could back up a little bit and get into the track of football as far as you've got connected.
Okay. There was a lot of talk about starting football. Mr. Buckman had a son that was, I think, wanted to play football. Yeah. And at that time, Steve Finley and Don Hermson, Buck had talked to those guys about starting football. So Finley and Hermson started freshman football that first year. And then during that first year, Mr. Buckman talked to Kilberg and I to start the next incoming freshman. So when Finley and Hermson were sophomores, Tom and I were the freshman coaches. And then a couple, 3 years later, or 2 years later, Kilbreath was hired to be the varsity, Jim Kilbreath, varsity coach. And I can't remember his assistant coaches. George Maurer was at one time.
So I've been football would have started about 73, 74, somewhere in there maybe.
Let's see. I started 70, 71. 71, 72, maybe 72, 73, maybe.
Okay.
Somewhere. That's around someplace.
Yeah.
Dr. Bradley at Cascade can tell you when it started exactly, because he was involved with that.
Okay.
And then when Kilbreath resigned from football, Kilberg went to the varsity and I moved up to the sophomores. And then Finley got back involved with the sophomore team with me, and he was my assistant coach until I retired.
Right.
2009. Well, no, he retired in 2000, whatever.
You know, I remember a lot of different aspects of it, but I remember the sophomore team with a few guys as coaches, and apparently at some point the varsity had those original uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
They must have got another set, and then they moved
down to us.
To you guys. And that stuff lasted.
Oh, yeah.
It was unbelievable.
We used that for years, those sand knit uniforms.
Yeah.
I imagine those cost quite a lot at the time. But, boy, they were. We used. I brought a bunch home one time, and my wife repaired the knee pad pockets and junk like that. But that's all we did, wash them, and they look sharp.
They don't make stuff like that anymore.
No.
I mean, it was incredible.
No.
Say, how's the uniforms? Well, they're good for another year.
We were kind of picky about that. But I thought our football team, those kids and stuff, they worked pretty hard. And for the most part, it was fun.
At some point they constructed the football field originally, and I remember at some point in the 80s there that it was obvious that the original design came without a crown in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
Well, what happened was that there was a low, real bad low spot in the northeast corner there.
Mm-hmm. It's still low.
Yeah, and it always got wet. And so finally I talked to our Mr. Bart, Buildings and Grounds, I said, we need to bring in more dirt, you know, and crown it. I don't remember what he told me. He said, like, well, you can have 10 loads.
Yeah.
You know, which was nothing.
Right.
Well, I finally, at the end of that season, whatever year it was, I said, okay, bring the dirt in. So they did. And when they did, it was obvious it wasn't enough. Well,
oh, yeah.
Fortunately, he was gone to some meetings. And I told him, just keep bringing the dirt. And that's...
What, we had 25 loads in or something?
Yeah, that's how we got enough.
But see, when they built the track, put in the good track, before they put the surface down, they brought in another 20 loads of dirt, too.
Just a second.
Okay.
That's okay. I'll call it back.
But when we built that track, the ag track, we just didn't really... Billy Spiegel took a grader, just graded it out and put some rock in there, and then we used ag lime. That Dwayne Calvert was the contractor. At that time, we had 6 lanes, which was enough to, you know, that's what everybody had was 6 lanes.
Yeah.
But then when they decided to put in that all-weather track, the Booster Club got on board and really raised money, and the whole Booster Club really took over the field, made the stands and the concession stand and everything, and they hauled in a whole pile of dirt. I remember that.
At that point?
Yeah, there was 20, 25 more loads, and that northeast side is still a little goofy, but the track, they built the track up so the whole thing is level.
Okay.
So Gilbert always complained about the track being too high. Yeah, too bad.
Well, there must have been, you guys put in a lot of years at football and track, and it had to be a lot of bus rides. Recall experiences with the bus rides? Or
well, let's see here. One night I thought we were going to get killed coming up from Davenport, from DeWitt, on the turnoff, the cutoff.
Yeah.
See, originally that when that road was two-laner, there was a passing lane there, and this bus driver, who I won't name, was racing a semi.
Okay.
And finally I just yelled at her and said, let him win.
Let him win.
Then one night... This wasn't too long ago, before I retired, we were down at Marion, running into Marion Relays, Invitational Meet, and Mrs. Rowling was our bus driver, and we were getting ready to leave, and she always checked the lights to make sure everything worked. You know, it was just her routine, she'd check everything. She was doing fine, and she says, I don't have any taillights. I have headlights, but no taillights. So we hemmed and hawed around, and this was like at 9:30 or 10 o'clock, so that was 11:30, 12 arrival, if there was no problems.
Yeah.
So I suggested, and let's run with the four-way flashers and the flasher on the top, home. Oh, I got a call. What's his name? Henschen at that time. I got to call him first. Okay, you do that. So... She called and talked to him, and she said, yeah, I'll feel comfortable doing that. He said, okay. So we ran the hallway home with four ways on and the fog light on, and it was fine. We got home, and there was no problems. We didn't get stopped by any police or anything, so it was good. But I guess going to Mount Pleasant, or what's the other town down south we played football at? Right west of Mount Pleasant. Fairfield.
Fairfield, yeah.
We were going down there, you know, and first, I don't forget the sequence of the days of the week, but we made 2 trips down there in 1 week.
Football playoffs, right?
Yeah, the playoffs.
Yeah.
and the one bus driver we had would not drive fast enough to keep up. And I'm not using any names, so I think you probably know who it is. But on the two-lane roads, she would only drive in. Those transmissions, I think, had at the time were sticks, and they had five speeds in them, and she'd only drive in fourth gear. The rest of the time, if we were on the four-lane, then she'd drive in fifth gear, and she wouldn't stay up, and she was one of the team. We had three buses with kids on for team. She had, it was terrible.
Got it. Well, the thing that always frustrated me was, you know, when I would hear, you know, concerns or complaints about the trips, when you'd call up to the bus garage and talk to Lila or Gary, they'd defend them to the death. They'd never say,
couldn't be their fault.
Yeah, it was frustrating.
Well, the thing that really most frustrating was they'd always want to schedule when to leave, you know, schedule to leave, bus leave. So we'd put down there a time, and there invariably the bus would show up 1 minute past the time. So then we'd be late getting to where we were going. If we wanted them there at 2:30, they'd be there at 2:31.
Yeah.
That used to just grate me forever. You know, that's when we want to leave. We want to load at 2:25 or 2:20.
Yeah.
That was very frustrating.
So you had this partnership with Coach Finley on both track and field and football for a lot of years, right?
Yes, many years. What do you want to know about that?
Well, no. I don't have enough time to...
Many stories.
Lots of stories.
I ran into Finley the first time I got to... I know who he was at UNI.
Okay.
In the library. Because my wife and I always went to the library. That was our weekly date every night. It was the library except Friday and Saturday. So... I'm sitting there, this was in the spring, and I'm sitting there and I'm doing something, and he comes up and starts talking to me about track and field. Well, I'd seen him in other classes in the gym, in the phys ed building, so I knew he was in phys ed, but I couldn't remember his name. So he talked to me two, three, four times a year about track in the library. It's probably the only times he ever went to the library, but... So then when my first meetings in the beginning of the school year, I go into Farley Gym. That's where the meeting was, you know, your first meeting.
And
here's Finley sitting. I thought, I recognize that guy. So he and Mike Coffey and Dave DeLeary came up and introduced themselves to me. They were the first three guys. So then Finley was coaching basketball and football, and then Paul Holt was my assistant in track for 1 year.
Okay.
And then he left in the middle of the semester, the semester to go into private business. And then Finley thought, that'd be a good idea. So, and then he was my assistant in track for
all those years.
Yeah, until I retired, because he kept it going. And it was good, because he wanted this and I wanted this, and we worked together pretty good. And
yep, you guys really run a good ship.
Every once in a while, he would run his mouth a little bit too much. I'm sure you're familiar with some of that.
Oh, yeah. So, all those years you were at WD, you lived here in Dubuque, right?
Mm-hmm.
And did you, like, carpool guys, or how did you?
No, I never carpooled. When we got married and we took the job out at West Dubuque, my wife was teaching at Sageville, and so we decided that I would drive and she could putt around town and putt to Sageville. So I drove by myself every day.
Okay.
And I can proudly say I didn't get stuck once. and I wasn't involved in any accidents. You know, I was.
Got some near misses, maybe.
Yeah, a few, but once they went to the four lane, then it was really, really good. But you had to watch there at the truck stop corner. And
still do.
Thunder Hills corner. And now, you know, when I would go to work in the morning, Piasta kids were kind of NICC students are nuts, but that on-ramp on the other side, when we first started using the four-lane, there weren't hardly anybody ever coming off there.
Right.
So you had to pay. Now you better pay attention.
Backed up onto the highway.
Yeah. I went so early, I'd miss that stuff.
It's funny how some things never change. I stopped at the high school earlier this year, talked to Dan, and pulled into the parking lot. I looked to my right, and there is that row of pickups.
Oh, yeah.
It's still the same. There they were. They all back in.
Yep.
And it's just funny.
They all got stacks, and they're all pretty rusty and junky. If you go up to Hempstead, you'll see the same thing.
Is that right?
Yep.
Wow.
And you go by Senior. I haven't been by Senior lately, but their parking lot's kind of small. But up here at Hempstead, if you go on the east side where they made that new lot, a lot of trucks.
Oh, yeah. Amazing.
But
you know, if you go by Senior, they don't have enough space for cars. It's just terrible. It's just all over the place.
Yeah, we were over there the other couple weeks ago for my granddaughter's music concert, where they get everybody in the district together, high schools, middle school, elementaries. And we were lucky we snuck in by that lot by the old tennis courts used to be up there on the east west side.
Yeah.
And we had it easy, but there was people walking.
Oh, yeah.
It's just terrible there.
Yeah, it's too bad.
But there's just no room.
Yeah.
When they bought that property years ago, nobody anticipated the size.
That's at any rate. Anything else you remember, recall, significant stuff from all those years?
Significant stuff. Oh. Our football championship was a big deal. The basketball ones were a big deal. Let's see, we really never. That one snowstorm when we got off a week in April.
That was April 8th. It was the Sunday of my daughter Jill's baptism.
1973.
And we had the baptism, we went out to the farm. My folks came down and we barely got back to Farley. My folks stayed with us for
a week.
Almost. And I'd go to the Farley office after a couple days, and Wickham and I and Wegman would get in the car and drive out,
check it out.
God, that was
crazy. That was the worst one, I think. But by and large, we were pretty fortunate. We had a really stable faculty for all those years.
Yeah, right.
And that was really, really important to the continuity of everything.
Yeah, that was very, we had all those stupid portable classrooms.
Oh, yeah, they were terrible, but.
Strangely enough, I think if you talk to a lot of those faculty members, they kind of liked being out in those portables because they were kind of by themselves. And
yeah. I taught in a portable for a couple of years, mechanical drawing, and back in the back there. And when the weather was decent, it was pretty good. But I liked being in there. You know, you were by yourself, and it was usually warm.
Yeah.
But it wasn't ideal, by no means. But getting rid of all those, the bond issues, I guess the failure of the bond issues to pass when we weren't asking for anything extravagant was really frustrating for the staff.
Because you knew your fate was determined by all those nice people in Dyersville and Petersburg and New Vienna, who were going to vote against it.
Yeah.
And I remember working hard on a couple of those and
get shot down.
And then, and in the end, the only thing that saved us was the local option sales tax.
Mm-hmm.
And even that wasn't approved, but it was a countywide
vote.
So thank goodness it was because that's the only way it passed.
Yeah. The county, it was, that's been a benefit to everybody in the county. Everybody pays, tourists, everyone.
Everybody stops and gets a tank of gas?
Or yep.
Stops at the restaurants or stays overnight? Or
yeah. I think the school now is pretty well set up. And I really thought during all the years that the students had opportunities to explore a lot of areas and get a good education. If they wanted to apply themselves, it was available to them. A lot of the kids I had, not all of them, but a certain percentage were there because the law said you had to be there, and you're familiar with those guys. But a lot of those kids, once they've been out a couple, 3-4 years, they kind of figured it out what they needed to do and have shaped up. And
right, a lot of them. A number of them went to the military.
Mm-hmm.
That shaped them up in a hurry, too.
Whether they liked it or not. But that's, I think the kids, generally, you have 5% of them that are rotten and the rest of them are good.
Yeah.
And you spend 150, 60, 70% of your time on the 5% are rotten. Right?
That's the way it is.
But, I thought we got along pretty good. And it was pretty consistent on how things were run, and we were always short money, but we could always spend more money, but
yeah,
it's that way everywhere, I think.
Yeah. Well, that's good stuff.